Before we get started today, just a reminder to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to find us. And if you want to make sure that you don't miss an episode, hit follow on Apple Podcasts or subscribe on some other platforms, and you'll receive our new episodes automatically. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the latest episode of the Empower Up podcast. I'm Jeremy Boren, Gray Matters brand manager. And today's episode, we're going to be talking about a new cybersecurity partnership, specifically in the industrial space, that we've formed with BlastWave. And our guest today is Tom Seago. He's CEO of BlastWave. Welcome, Tom.
Thanks, Jeremy. Nice to meet you and good to be here.
So, Tom, let's kind of get into it and just learn a little bit about you and learn a lot about BlastWave. So you were founded in 2017. You've been growing fast. It's been a super exciting time between 2017 and now. You know, what are a couple of the problems, maybe two or three, that your team set out to solve for customers, and, you know, have those changed or developed?
Yeah. So I think our founding was based on the need to protect critical infrastructure from what I saw was this tsunami of cyber attacks that were targeting manufacturing, energy, water systems. And that mission has not changed at all. The why hasn't changed, but the how has. And by that, I mean, we started out with this extremely ambitious goal to build an unhackable stack, starting with a chip that upon initial boot up in the factory would create crypto keys, and then it would burn a fuse once it encrypted the bootloader. And then we'd build a new operating system on top of that with a kernel, a networking layer that was built on mesh networking, an application layer built on bytecodes. Okay. That was very difficult. It was memory safe. And then finally a human layer that would eliminate usernames and passwords. So obviously we didn't do all of that. We tended to focus on the networking layer, which is the glue between all these digital devices. And it was kind of replacing this old version of VPN or the second generation, which was this cloud hosted proxy server model for remote access. Now, one thing that also that we kept constant was this desire to get rid of usernames and passwords, because those things, I hate them personally. I don't know anybody who loves them.
I don't think anybody does.
Yeah. So we made a kind of a concerted effort to eliminate those, but yet maintain a super simple authentication process. And that authentication process was patterned after Apple Pay. I worked at Apple for about a decade. And so, you know, that kind of trying to figure out how to marry design principles to give you both security and convenience at the same time, instead of having to struggle with a trade-off.
No, it's fascinating, like where you start out and where you end up. So I always like to ask people that, because especially, you know, since the time frame we're talking about, so much has gone on in the cyber world. So, you know, so what are a few things that customers like really like about what BlastWave offers that, you know, folks maybe, you know, even non-technical folks who are maybe in a leadership position who are trying to evaluate all the options out there?
Yeah, I would say three things. They like the simplicity, they like the performance, and they like our service. And I would say the simplicity is clearly evident when you try to authenticate to our solution. You essentially pull out your phone, you scan a QR code, apply your Face ID. There's a whole bunch of cryptographic challenges and responses that are going on in the background, but it takes less than 5 minutes. And you don't have to, there's not many decisions that the human has to make. So there's not many mistakes they can make. So it's very convenient, very simple. It's also simple to deploy, in that we can spin up a host agent literally by hitting copy and then paste into a terminal window. We can also do scripting that can spin up hundreds of agents or gateways in less than a minute. And so we have a very slick way of making it simple to deploy. And then it's also really simple to manage, because we integrate with Azure Active Directory and the various SSO providers, so that you can establish groups and policies and get really fine-grained control and permissions on who can do what. So you can have, for example, your Allen Bradley managed service provider connecting directly to their PLCs that they're managing, doing software updates, troubleshooting, whatever. And that group is isolated from anything else in the factory floor. Nice. So it's a very slick way to control that, but yet make it very convenient for them. So
right.
And now the third thing I was going to say, the third thing that people love is the service. Right. You know, and this really speaks to our core values, but it's about, like, we're very customer driven. And I'll tell you this one story. We had a prospect who was kind of doing this bake off between us and a couple of vendors. And they had this requirement that we discovered, like, at the 11th hour. And they wanted us to integrate with this other platform. And so our CTO calls me. I wake up. It's dark outside. I used to be a swimmer, so I get up early anyway. But so it's dark outside. And he says, we need to integrate with this platform, and it doesn't appear that this would work. Tom, do you know anybody there? Turns out I knew a board member, and the board member contacted the CEO. The CEO then kind of put me in contact with the right person. And in 48 hours, we had identified a way we were able to get an NFR and a strategic partnership in place. By the weekend, the engineering team figured out how to integrate this with their platform. And by Monday morning, we were good to go. And the customer was just blown away by that speed and agility.
That's a great example of service. And yeah, being able to turn it around that fast with something unexpected is, yeah, that's like the toughest scenario too, right? To solve.
Yeah.
That's right. Excellent. Yeah. So I, you know, not to throw some labels on things, but just so people kind of know what some of the offerings are. One thing I wanted to touch on was, you know, the software defined perimeter that, you know, BlastWave talks about. Can you kind of explain what that is, you know, for people who maybe aren't experts, and what the advantages of that is specifically for, you know, the industrial space?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a, you know, we all suffer from word salad. You know, zero trust has just become a buzzword now, even though it's a very specific architecture, 800.207 NIST framework. So there's a lot. It's difficult to parse all these different kind of acronyms and labels. But in terms of software-defined perimeter, I think, let me just say first, there's kind of the general software-defined perimeter, and then there's what we do differently. And I think the main advantages of a software-defined perimeter solution are that the SDP splits out the control plane and the data plane, so that the SDP controller sets rules for accepting SDP hosts, so that identity and policy are verified before access is granted. Now, in our case, we go a step further. We try to minimize what's called the unauthenticated attack surface. And this is really important. So we don't have a single public facing TCP port. And with that, we become extremely difficult for people to attack using bug exploits, zero day viruses, things like that. We also have built in phishing resistant MFA, multi-factor authentication. Mm-hmm. And then we also have very versatile gateway deployment options, including layer 2 cloaking. So we take it kind of to the next level.
And on your site, and I think this is where it comes in, you know, you talk about you can't hack what you can't see, right? And that's where that visibility, that or invisibility, I guess, becomes an advantage. And that's a difference maker.
It's a huge difference maker. And, you know, if you look at the big vendors that we're disrupting, like on the IT side, it's Zscaler, Perimeter 81, Illumio. On the OT side, it's companies like Tempered Networks, folks like that.
Gotcha.
But that cloaking is critical.
Absolutely. So what are the few things that, you know, manufacturers and other industrial, you know, clients should be really focused on now, just in general, when it comes to cybersecurity, that you're hearing from them all the time?
Yeah, I would say that, number one, there's no silver bullet. As much as I would love there to be one, it doesn't exist. Yeah. And so I think the first thing that they should be focused on is getting a health checkup. It's like going to the doctor's office. You need to go in and you need to have your vitals tested. You need to have an assessment done to figure out where are your strengths and weaknesses, where are your gaps. And from there, then you can take measured action based on prioritized list of the low-hanging fruit, so you can know where to get your best cybersecurity spend. So after that assessment, though, then, you know, I think I have a bias that the two other things that I would do in terms of tactics would be focusing on multi-factor authentication, especially passwordless or what's called phishing-resistant MFA.
Right.
And then the other thing that I think would be important for manufacturers and industrial companies to focus on would be start to put in place micro-segmentation to the extent you can. And what this means is kind of dividing things up into smaller and smaller chunks, so you have very fine-grained permissions to those assets. And this thwarts what folks call lateral movement. A lot of manufacturing environments, energy facilities, water and power facilities, they oftentimes have these flat networks where if you get access one place, you can then scan, do Nmap scans and figure out where the crown jewels are, and then you can go deploy malware to those locations and create a lot of havoc. So I think micro-segmentation would be another thing that I think they should be focused on right now.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And that's something that my colleague, Scott Christensen, who's our cyber practice lead, you know, has talked about, I think, the entire time he's been at Grey Matter. So we're totally aligned on that priority for folks in the industrial space.
Yeah.
So, you know, something else I wanted to ask was, you know, Tom, you know, you seem super excited about just to be in cybersecurity. So what are some of the reasons you got into it? And why do you find it to be, you know, so interesting, especially, you know, coming from a place like Apple?
Yeah. So just full disclosure, my first decade of my career was spent in manufacturing.
Oh,
so
okay.
I was at Caterpillar in Peoria. I then worked at Eli Lilly in manufacturing there at the Clinton facility. I also worked in Emerson Electric's division, Fisher Rosemount. Mm-hmm. So I spent a lot of time understanding what these environments were like. I mean, I remember when I was in college, I was really excited to go on these job interviews, especially the plant tour. So I'd go to like the Archer Daniels Midland plant in Decatur, Illinois, yeah, and see how they made high fructose corn syrup. And I just loved watching that stuff. So I think my passion for an understanding of where the real magic happens, and the real magic's in the Rust Belt, frankly. Mm-hmm. There's so many fantastic things that we're making in America. And I think the CHIPS Act, by the way, is going to bring in a lot of exciting things as well. But now to go back to your other question about why am I so excited about cybersecurity, I think unlike industries like nuclear fusion or sequencing the human genome, cyber has an adversary that's trying to undo all of your work. So it's not just about technology and figuring these hard problems out, how to harden and facilitate these security breakthroughs, but it's also that the adversaries are oftentimes using the exact same tools that the defender community is using. They're doing reconnaissance, they're doing deception, they're applying artificial intelligence and machine learning as well. They're doing ransomware as a service. Mm-hmm. So that aspect of the adversary makes this really interesting to me. I think the other thing that's interesting is it's very asymmetric. The adversary must only be successful one time, whereas defenders have to defend against a myriad of attacks and threat vectors. So I think engineering systems and processes to deal with these realities is really challenging. Now, I think another thing that's interesting is cybersecurity in one form can be very, very simple. So, you know, that tagline, you know, Othello, did you remember the tagline for Othello?
Remind me on that one.
Okay. It was a minute to learn, a lifetime to master, or something like
Got
that.
It. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's these tons of frameworks out there. There's the ICS MITRE ATT&CK framework. They have 90 specific techniques that hackers use. There's also like the ICS cyber kill chain, mm-hmm, which is very cool in that it describes the process that every hacker uses to plot to achieve their objectives. And I think if you boil that down to its most elemental form, hackers are really trying to do two things. They're trying to gain access and they're trying to extract as much value as possible. That's it. They just want to get in and they want to monetize.
Right.
So, you know, I think that kind of series of factors make this extremely interesting. It's a very fast moving field. You know, I did play professional poker for a few years.
No way.
It has that feel. Yeah. It has that feel of kind of you're not just trying to beat the house. You're having to beat these other players who are actively trying to beat you. And it's a partial information game. And it's just very fascinating. So
that's really cool. Do you still play?
I do from time to time. I mean, okay. You know, obviously I don't have as much time as I would like now, but
that's cool.
I'm sure I will in the future at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I think you've probably named what everybody would agree is the top one, ransomware. But, you know, in addition to ransomware included, you know, what do you think the top challenges are in cyber for 2023? And, you know, how might those differ a little bit for the IT side of the house and what we focus on, the operational technology, the OT side?
Yeah, well, I would say, if you think about the future, let's start with what's happened in the recent past. And I'd say in 2022, and I'm not sure if you're aware of this, Jeremy, but in 2022, manufacturing surpassed financial services to be the most attacked industry.
I didn't realize that.
And I'll give you two other facts then. So, the average ransom payment in manufacturing is now exceeding an average of $2 million. That's just the payment versus the industry average, which is around $900K. Okay. So it's more than 2X the payment. This is where, when I said this is where the magic happens, this is also where the money is. And then the third factor that I think is interesting is that IT vulnerabilities year over year were basically flat. They were up 0.4%. Okay. But in manufacturing, they were up 50% year over year. So manufacturing is in the crosshairs. And I think what's the reason that's important is that looking forward, there is this convergence that's happening between the IT world and the OT world. The advanced analytics capabilities that I'm sure you're aware of that help optimize throughput, OEE, reduce scrap, improve quality. Those things create these rich data streams, both from a plant, from other plants, from other organizations that are then harvested, ingested, and create insights through the cloud, through the cloud's infinite capacity. And that those kind of insights then can create opportunities for efficiency and things like that. And so that necessarily means, though, that these IT and OT worlds are converging. And that means that we're going to start needing to think about OT platforms a little bit differently. And how can we make the security of that facilitate and enable this digital transformation that everyone's going through, as opposed to being at worst an afterthought and at best something that people are trying to cobble together with existing tools. So it requires some fresh thinking. I think those are the two biggest things I would think about, and I think the controls are going to change as well. The cybersecurity controls, they're going to need to be adapted for these two environments because they're just so different. I mean, if you think about IT environments have these 3 to 5 year lifespans. It's pretty well contained. Maybe it's a SaaS app. It's in a data center. Manufacturing environments are very different. Lifespans are 30 to 50 years for certain pieces of equipment. In many cases, they're using Windows NT, Windows 98, 2000, things that can't be patched, that can't be updated unless you spend 8 or 9 figures. That's just not going to happen.
Yep.
So you've got to be able to deal with reality the way it is, not the way you wish it were. And so this approach is going to require vendors to change quite a bit about the way they view the world.
Well, and I think that you've hit on a point too, that's one of the areas where Gray Matter and BlastWave really specialize, is working with an existing infrastructure, you know, like you're talking about, where you have a piece of equipment, you know, or an operating system that can't be upgraded or patched, and, you know, working with that. And I think that's one of the huge reasons, you know, for our partnership and what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah. Well, so let me ask you. So what do you see Gray Matter's kind of biggest priorities in 2023?
Well, for cyber, you know, I think it's one of the points you made earlier about getting that assessment, you know, getting customers to understand that they really need to understand their assets and what is on their network, because on the OT side, we find that a lot of times companies don't really know what is there, you know, and the first step is, you know, getting that visibility, discovering all of that. And then, you know, we talked about it earlier too, is prioritizing how to start putting those protections around it and how to do it in a cost effective way, you know, and also, you know, prioritizing that availability part for operations, because obviously that's something that, you know, has always been a concern for the operation side, is how is this going to affect, you know, what we're doing, what we're manufacturing, producing, you know, it can't interrupt that.
And that brings up,
go ahead.
I was gonna say, that brings up a really good point about how, about how a lot of organizations that I've seen, they need to pull their head out of the sand in a way and realize that this air-gapped model they had in the past not only doesn't exist, it kind of never existed really,
right?
At least in the recent past, once iPhone came out. And so I think the you know, there needs to be a hard look in the mirror about where things are and where they need to go in order to avoid being one of those victims of these kind of ransomware attacks that are becoming extremely prevalent. So how, I just also want to kind of, sorry, I'm turning the tables here a little bit, but so I'm very curious, and I'm asking this for a reason, but so how would you describe Gray Matter's kind of mission? And what are your values? Because what I want to kind of share is kind of why this partnership was so important for us. And I think it's really synergistic with you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we always talk about transforming operations and empowering people. And, you know, if you think about how that applies to cyber, I think it really makes a lot of sense, because, you know, when a company's going through a digital transformation, they're adopting analytics, they're tapping into new data streams, you know, security has to be fundamental to all of that. And so that's part of that transforming somebody's operations and what they're doing. Because if you're not willing to make sure that those connections are secure and the data, you know, is where it needs to be, and the people who have access, and only those people have access to it, then, you know, you're going to be a lot less apt to be willing to adopt new technologies or to try, you know, an analytics project or something like that. You know, and then on the empowering people side, it's, you know, some of the same ideas. It's making sure that people on the plant floor can do what they need to do securely and have access to that information, you know, seamlessly, and feel confident, you know, in doing it, and that they're not going to be, you know, victimized by a ransomware attack. And so, you know, that's an empowering aspect of it. And then, you know, for core values, I think it goes back to one of our five key ones, which is the teamwork aspect, because with what both of our teams do, you know, we're not just presenting you with a predefined package. It's customized. It's to fit your organization, because manufacturers and other industrial clients are really unique. You know, they have, you know, countless facilities that need to be treated perhaps in different ways. And so that's the same for the OT network. And so I think you have to come at it from a, our CEO, Jim Gillespie, always talks about co-innovating. And he really means it. You know, he's talking about co-innovating, developing a solution together, you know, that might start with an assessment, or if you already have one, kind of prioritizing what has been, you know, discovered about your network. So I think those are some of the ways that the core values, you know, with our team relate to what we're trying to do in OT cyber.
Yeah. And I would say that this ecosystem of different players that you call like are important for this teamwork. It's not just the employees and different functions within a company. It's all the different contractors, service providers, and even upstream suppliers and downstream distributors and customers that all have to play together to really unlock a lot of that value. And one of the things I love about it, and one of the reasons why it was like almost like a When Harry Met Sally moment with Jim and me, you know, our backgrounds were similar in terms of like, you know, focusing on this a lot of our early career. And, you know, it was also this belief that long-term relationships are what really make life meaningful, both personal and business. And I think that kind of clicked with me and Jim when we first talked. I mean, we believe in kind of this maniacal focus on the customer and that customization element you talked about, where you're really thinking through what the customer's requirements are. What are their needs? You're not just pushing some product or pushing some predefined service. Obviously, you've done all your homework. And one of the things that also is so exciting to me is the experience and the generations of innovation that Gray Matter has gone through before there were even PCs. You know, right. and I even remember doing Fortran programming on fax machines. And so, you know, again, this is why this is such a great partnership. And I feel like we can really help your customers add another element that I think is going to be critical in the next 5 years and helping them not just become secure in a defensive way. So it's not just defense, it's also offense. Mm-hmm. It's allowing them to really unlock this potential that's been there, this latent potential with these rich data streams and insights that can enable cost reductions, improvement in quality, and all the other things we talked about. So I feel like that alignment of mission is the thing that I'm most excited about. And I can't wait to start working with many of your customers.
Absolutely. And Tom, I think there's just one more topic that I wanted to get to before we close out today, and it's something that we get asked by customers pretty frequently nowadays, especially in our space. You know, one is about government regulations, the other is about insurance, cybersecurity insurance. And I was just wondering kind of like how you see that changing based on, you know, what's going on with the cyber landscape and kind of how, you know, can play a role in helping customers deal with that.
Yeah. Cyber insurance used to be part of property and casualty. So it used to be bundled. It used to be assumed. And in the last several years, they've actually split that out now. Property doesn't cover cyber anymore. And the reason for that is that the risk is undefined. Mm-hmm. How do you do actuarial tables in an environment that's changing so dynamically? It's not like health and car insurance or home insurance where you have all this data that can predict what the risks are. In cyber, the risks are ill-defined and they're growing like crazy. I noticed the correlation between ransomware increase and insurance premiums is almost 1-to-1.
Yeah.
Ransomware was up 92% last year. Insurance premiums are up 96% last year. Now, what's also interesting is insurance companies have gotten smart. They were making a ton of money 3 years ago, and now they're underwater on all their policies, many of their policies. And so what they're trying to think about is no longer how do we just check boxes? How do we try to actually help the customer reduce their risk?
Right.
And so we've actually tried to get ahead of this, and we've partnered with a company called Cysurance that essentially can deliver like $1 million policy. And if they use Blast Shield, they can get up to 75% off that policy because we reduce risk that dramatically. So it's one of those things that where it's a win-win and you don't have to take someone's opinion for it. The customer is going to save that money. And in healthcare, it's even worse. In healthcare, because of HIPAA data, and the super high cost of ransoms in healthcare, the premiums have gone up as much as 300%. Many customers are not even insurable anymore. So there's a lot of challenges that are happening right now in the insurance field. And again, it's just because of that dynamic nature of the underlying cybersecurity risk.
So Tom, how do customers usually find you or come to you? What are they trying to achieve, or where are they in their process, you know, that they start a conversation with what, you know, BlastWave offers?
Usually it starts with someone who is trying to implement zero trust network access, or they are trying to deal with a significant event that has taken place where the existing partners and vendors that they are working with did not solve the problem. And you know, when you look at the average cybersecurity spend, it was up 12% last year, but ransomware was up 90%.
Right.
So whatever they're doing, it's not working.
Yeah.
So I think people are starting to look for alternatives. And I think innovative companies like ours are things that people are a little bit more open to than they would have been otherwise. And maybe some of the incumbents, I won't name them because I don't want to get hate mail.
Right.
But the incumbents, you know, may not be meeting those needs. They may not have the agility and speed that someone like a BlastWave has.
Right. In the beginning of the year, 2023 is a good time to be looking at those alternatives to find out what's out there and what can be done. So,
Well,
Tom, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the Empower Up podcast. It's been just a pleasure having a conversation with you today.
Thanks a lot, Jeremy.
That does it for this episode of the Empower Up podcast. Rate, review, and follow us at Apple Podcasts. And to learn more about our cybersecurity offerings, visit us at graymattersystems.com. Look under the offerings section for industrial cybersecurity, and you can get all the info there. All right, see you next time.